today. We're going to freak you slap out today, all right? I mean, you're going to be like, oh my word, what is going on around here? If you're brand new, we're at the apex of a journey, a six-week journey this entire church community has been on. And we've been diving into small groups. We've been engaging in these little journals that have been helping us process. And we've been doing challenges and take-home work of asking the question of what consumes me. Is it God that consumes me, or is it my stuff? And God's literally been tearing us apart, kind of like what, you know, that song said, and kind of reordering our hearts. And we had the prayer experience this past week. Anybody enjoy the prayer experience this week? Yeah, that was pretty cool, right? And many of you, over 100 people or so that went through and engaged and had a very moving experience here through the prayer experience. And if you're new today, man, I just really hope that you get something out of today. I hope that you like what happens today. Unlike most weekends, we're all about those who are walking in today. I'm talking a little more to people who have been engaged on this journey, people who have really been engaged for the last 6 weeks. If you're somebody who's cynical here today, maybe you've not quite engaged, I'm glad you're here. I'm not going to worry too much about what you're thinking, because I really want to build into people who God has been doing something in. God has really been taking us to a new place, challenging us, growing us through our small groups, what happens on the weekends, through our work in the guides, prayer experience, the whole deal. And so we're going to do something with these later on today. We've been putting these in your hands for a couple weeks. If you have not read through and processed this, you might just do that throughout the service today, and then we are going to respond on this later this morning. So just hang on to that. Now, before I kick into anything else, let's go ahead and just take a moment and pray. God, thank you that we can come into a room like this. I thank you for every single person that's in this room this morning. And God, all of us are here, and we could be any other number of places, doing any number of things right now. We could be home sleeping right now. We could be home watching NFL Today right now. We could be, you know, doing any unnamed number of activities, recreational things. And yet, we are here today in a dark room because we want to meet you. And so I'm just praying that you would help us do that today, help take us to a new place as we declare ourselves today. And God, I just pray that you would help us to be in tune with what you are doing and what you are saying to us today. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, you know, I want to tell you a story today, or kind of look at a story today that is one of my favorite stories from the Bible. Ever since I was a kid, I love the story of Zacchaeus, and it's a story about a little guy, a little man who climbs a tree, and he basically is a Jew, and yet Zacchaeus is hated by the Jews. In fact, it's one of the reasons he climbs a tree, because he knows that if the Jewish people, his fellow countrymen, would see him, they would actually beat him to a bloody pulp. All right, I mean, he was very despised because he was a tax collector. And so Zacchaeus climbs this tree, hoping that nobody will see him. And the other reason he climbs the tree is because he wants to see Jesus. He knows Jesus is coming to town. And wherever Jesus goes, love is there. All right, people just flock around Jesus because there's always love there. And so there's God, you know, just scads and scads of people gathering around Jesus. And so Zacchaeus is up in this tree hoping to get a glimpse of Jesus. And Jesus comes walking down the middle of the street, and he looks up and he sees this guy Zacchaeus in the tree, and he recognizes him. Now, we don't know why he recognizes him, but we have this sense that somewhere along the line, Jesus and Zacchaeus have interacted. I don't know if they've hung out in a bar together. I don't know if, you know, Jesus had been by the tax collecting booth. I don't know what it was, but you know, he notices him up in the tree, and Zacchaeus is despised by all of his fellow countrymen, because he basically has to go in and extract taxes from his fellow Jews and pay the Roman government. So people just hate him for that. And so Jesus notices him in the tree, and he says to him, he says, "Zacchaeus, come down. I'm coming to your house. We're going to have dinner. We're going to hang out and party hardy today." That's what's happening right here. And so Zacchaeus is blown away by this. He's like, he wants to come to my house? Nobody ever wants to hang out with me. And so, you know, and so understand, in this particular day, for somebody to say, "Hey, I want to come spend time with you," someone to invite themselves to your house is not imposing on you. It's actually like this very, you know, encouraging thing. It's this very complimentary thing. When you say, "I want to spend time with you," it's actually saying, "You're worthy of my time." And so Zacchaeus, nobody wants to be around Zacchaeus. Nobody ever wants to spend time with him. He's like, he wants to be close to me? He wants to come eat with me today? And so, you know, he's like, all these other people are judging me. You know, they never want to be around me. And yet Jesus wants to be with me? I mean, what's going on right here? So he scurries down the tree. And here's what we read in Luke chapter 19. It says, "But Zacchaeus came down," he met with Jesus, says, "he stood up and he said to the Lord, 'Lord, look, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times that amount. Jesus said to him, today, salvation has come to this house. So he gets down out of the tree, and they go to his house. They begin to hang out. There's probably all kinds of unscrumptious people there as well, all kinds of shady people. And right in the middle of them hanging out, Zacchaeus is like, whoa, hey, everybody, listen, here's what I'm going to do. From this point forward, half of everything that I own, I'm going to give away to those that are in poverty. And if I've cheated anyone, I'm going to pay 400% interest. 400%, I mean, that's pretty good, right? 400%. And you know what Jesus says? He says, today, salvation has come to this house. But what, you know what salvation means right here? Salvation means freedom. Jesus is saying, today, freedom has come to this house. Now, why is Jesus saying this right here? All right, I mean, he's saying, hey, unless you give half of everything you own away to the poor and then those in poverty, then you're not good with me. You know, there's kind of an issue here. Is that what he's saying? Or is he saying, man, 400%, if I've cheated anybody, I've got to give 400% interest? I mean, all of a sudden it's getting a little confusing here in terms of what exactly Jesus wants from us. You know, another time, Jesus is talking to a bunch of religious leaders, a bunch of Pharisees, people, you know, who are always kind of saying, oh, we know the law, they're trying to look spiritual, and they're talking about how good they are because they give 10% of their income. They're like, hey, look, we're good, man, we give 10% of what we have, and Jesus is kind of like, oh, okay, well, man, I guess that's good. I mean, that's about as close as a compliment as Jesus ever gives to the Pharisees. You know, he's like, I guess, you know, 10% is kind of the bare minimum that I ask of you. That's kind of an Old Testament thing. But I guess that's good. On another situation, Jesus meets a guy who's really high on himself. He's trying to impress everybody, you know, with his spiritual, you know, kind of posture. And he's got all these stripes on his sleeves, on his robe that show how spiritual he is. And basically comes to Jesus and he kind of asks this rhetorical question of Jesus. And he expects Jesus to just be like, oh, man, you are so good. I mean, he's kind of looking for a compliment. He's like, he's expecting Jesus to be like, dude, you are so generous. I wish everybody was like you. And here's the question. He said to Jesus, he said, what should I do, Jesus, to inherit eternal life? Thinking Jesus is going to be like, dude, man, you are so in. Man, you got nothing to worry about. And take a look at what Jesus says to him in Mark chapter 10. Jesus says, you still lack one thing. Sell everything you have and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. The guy is like, dude, man, bummer. Man, that's a bummer. You know what he does? He turns around and he walks away. Apparently, he didn't really want what he thought he wanted as bad as he wanted it. And at this point, it gets a little confusing. It's kind of like, okay, whoa, what's going on here, Jesus? I mean, is it 10% that you ask us to return to you? Is it 50%? Is it 100%? I mean, what exactly? Jesus, would you please just clarify what you're looking for right here? What's the deal? And see, this is where this whole idea of fair share thinking comes into play right here. See, I haven't talked much through this journey about time. All right, time's been an important part of our journey. In fact, we're going to respond on some of our time today. But part of the reason for that is because, you know, I just don't feel like time is really the tension point in most of our lives. The tension point in terms of what we're consumed by is really money and our stuff and whether our stuff has us. Nothing wrong with having nice stuff. It's whether our stuff has us. And I don't find myself walking around being like, oh, man, that person works a ton more hours than I do. I need to measure up to them. I better work my part. I don't find myself in a fair share posture when it comes to my time. But man, when it comes to my money, weird things begin to happen with my thinking and with my mind. In fact, a couple weeks ago in our small groups, we did the generosity challenge. Those of you in small groups, you did the generosity challenge where you were asked to identify some way that you could be generous with something. You know, whatever, whoever you wanted to be generous with, maybe it was a mission, maybe it was somebody who was just down on life at the moment, whatever it was. And our group, the group I was in, decided that we were going to do something very specific for a couple individuals. I can't really tell you any more on that because it was supposed to be anonymous. And in our group, Julie and I were sitting on opposite sides of the room, so we couldn't really talk about what we were going to do as a couple as we pooled our resources within the group. But we decided in the group that we were going to text one of our group members later that night and tell them what we were all investing financially in order to pool our resources and be a blessing to someone. And so later on when we got home, I'd been thinking about this, kind of praying, okay, God, what is it exactly that you want me and us to, as a family, to contribute to this? And it was really cool because I said to Julie, you know, Julie, what do you think? What do you think we're supposed to give this? And here's the cool thing. We actually had the same number. We actually both said the same number that God put on our hearts. That was really cool because we've never had that happen before. I mean, usually when we're, you know, God's calling us to give, usually one of us is way over here and one of us is here. And we're working toward the middle. It's a cool moment. We had the same number. And so I'm getting ready to text that number to our group member and say, hey, here's what we're putting in the pool. And you know what happened? As soon as I started texting, I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is too much. I mean, I wonder if so, you know, everybody else is giving like less and we're going to be the, you know, we're going to be the one, you know, that's like, oh man, we're giving way more than everybody else. So I'm like second guessing our number. And then as I'm like, oh, I wonder if it's too little. I mean, I wonder if I should be giving more. I wonder if everybody's going to be like, man, they're not very generous. This is the weird stuff that begins to happen. This is fair share thinking kicking in right here. And this is why money is such a spiritual force in our lives. And I realized in this moment two big things happening and how I was actually missing out on the experience, all right? Two great points that really bothered me in that moment right there. Number one, Julie and I, we'd been in an attitude of prayer, kind of say, okay, what is it, God, you want us to give? And we came up with the same number, never happened before. And was I celebrating that? No. Not at all. I mean, that was the first time I'd ever, you know what I'm worried about? If I'm giving more than somebody else or less than somebody else, that's what fair share thinking does. And then the second thing was that, you know, I couldn't believe that Julie and I could just talk and be like, hey, here's what we're going to write a check for on top of our daily, you know, monthly expenses and what we normally give to CrossPoint and beyond to CrossPoint, you know, that I could just say, oh, here's money we can easily part with that doesn't go to meeting our daily expenses. And listen, that was a cool moment. If you would ask me 5 years ago if I could do that, I'd be like, man, we're so tight. I mean, it was cool to be able to just say, here's what we can give. And yet, was I celebrating that? No, you know what I was doing? I was like, man, I hope I'm not giving too much. I hope somebody else isn't, you know, I'm not giving too little. This is what fair share thinking does. And it's weird. See, we become so worried about how what we're giving should have nothing to do with what someone else is doing. It's between us and God. See, because generous people have been changed. And when God begins to change us, when our hearts begin to change, we actually get generous. And it doesn't have to do with what somebody else is doing. It has to do with what God is inviting and calling me to do. We see this through the Bible time and time again. Time and time again. And listen, if you find yourself trending away from being generous, let me just tell you what, you're not changing. You're not changing. If you find yourself here and you've been cynical through this whole journey and you've been tracking for the last 6 weeks and you're like, man, I'm not getting into this generosity thing. Guess what? I just want to be really clear. God's probably not working in your life. All right? I just want to be really clear. You can be doing all the mumbo jumbo spiritual stuff, but if your heart is not growing in generosity, you are not changing. And at some point you have to ask yourself the question, why am I here? You know, why am I doing this? Do I really want things to be different? And some of us, I get that we've got baggage and we're hung up and I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes. Man, I don't know if I want to give or I want to be generous and invest in creating life change. But if you're just really resisting that, you've got to at some point maybe acknowledge that maybe God's not really doing what I'm always telling people he's doing in my life because I'm probably not changing. If I'm not being generous, I'm not changing. Because generous people have changed. There's a change taking place in our hearts. That's why Zacchaeus was like, dude, listen. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm giving half of what I have away to those in poverty. He was declaring, he was saying, I'm just doing something to show that there's been a change. There's a change and freedom has come to my life. And he's no longer just about money. He's about running after what God's heart runs after. One of the cool things that we've been looking at the last few weeks is some of the stories from individuals, from some of our partners in this journey, one of our partner churches. And today we have a cool story that we want you to hear from somebody from here from CrossPoint. And this is a guy who about six years ago just come to CrossPoint. And we did a series very, very similar to this called The Consume Journey. Same thing. We've tweaked it some, but he went through something like this. Really created some cool change in his life. And he did something radical. We didn't ask him to do what he's about to tell you. This was just what God put on his heart. But he's going to talk about how it really began to change him in a unique way. So take a look at Mark's story.
Well, my name's Mark Jones, and I've been coming to CrossPoint since, I think, early 2008. We moved to the Fishers area late 2007, and when we got up here, we wanted to get involved in a church that was part of the community, that was really our number one priority in picking a church was one that it was part of the community. We were raising our kids and wanted to get established in the community and feel like we were part of it. And we felt that Cross Point was the one church that we visited that we got that feeling from. It was probably a couple of months into being at Cross Point that the consumption series came about. And I don't think it was the first one or the second one, but one Sunday I left the consumption and was really moved about how we consume things and the reasons behind our consumption of them. And I went home and wrote down on a piece of paper that I wasn't going to consume anything for an entire year. I wasn't going to buy anything materialistic for 1 year. And as I thought about it, I had said I wasn't going to eat out, I wasn't going to go to movies, buy any clothes, anything whatsoever. And as I thought about it more and more, I was wondering why I wanted to do this and why I was driven to not buy anything for a year. And it wasn't as much of wanting to punish myself or not enjoy life. It was to see what was driving me to consume things or to purchase things. So as I wrote this goal or this vow, as I thought about it more and more, I said that I wasn't going to not just consume anything, but I wasn't going to consume anything that didn't involve having experience with friends or family. The neatest experience I had from all of it is I tried to keep track of all the money I thought I saved throughout the whole year without buying clothes or music, whatever materialistic items it may be. And I tried to keep track of it through all of it. And I remember writing Kurt a letter and I told him that I had fulfilled my year obligation of not consuming. And I wrote a check to Cross Point for the amount of money I thought I saved by not purchasing things. I can't remember exactly how much it was, $4,000 or $5,000. I remember writing that check and just getting an incredible sense of, I don't know if fulfillment's the word or satisfaction, but it was probably one of the neatest checks I wrote. And I think that was the beginning of my wife and I's commitment to starting to tithe and give back to the church. And really since then, that's been the catalyst for me personally. It's something my wife had wanted to do for quite some time. And I always had an excuse about it, or, you know, we'll have more money next year. This year's not gonna be a good year for us. So, you know, let's put that on the back burner and we'll come back to the tithing. And I think that aspect of it is one of the things that really changed my philosophy on giving to the church and tithing and realizing that there's never a perfect time to do it. It's no matter how much you make or don't make, you always can consume the amount you have, and you can always make it scarce, and that you only have so much to live on, and there's not enough left over to put it in savings or even give it to the church. And that was an eye-opening experience for me. And my wife and I finally one day, I remember sitting down, and it was during when the economy was bad, and we're both in real estate, and the real estate market had crashed. Actually, had forced my wife to give up her business that she owned and pursue another job. And for me, there was a time sitting in our basement, and if I didn't get one more rental check in, we thought we were going to start missing making payments on mortgages. And I might remember my wife saying, "Well, Mark, I think if we tithed, this could be the change for us and things will turn around." And I crunched the numbers financially, and when you're not making any money, giving 10% of zero is really an easy check to write. So I chose to make that commitment with her and said, "Yes, we'll start tithing and we'll start giving money to the church." And it's unbelievable how almost overnight things started turning around for us. My wife found a job. I own rental properties. I'm a real estate investor. And I started getting rent checks coming in. People who were late started paying. People started renting from us. And things started really to turn around. And I really do look back at that moment of making that choice to give back and to give back to the church as where it really turned around from us. And ever since then, we've never looked back.
And how cool is that right there? Is that not cool? Yeah, you know, Mark, he talked about some of the objections that he had to giving. Some, you know, I mean, let's do that later. You know, there are always objections. In fact, it got me thinking to a variety of objections that I hear oftentimes when it comes to, you know, God calling me to give, not just to a church, but to Him. The church is a local way that gets distributed. And why, you know, and sometimes these come from others. Sometimes these were my objections. I'm going to deal with a few of these today, but let me just go over a few of the things that I've heard. I've actually thought some of these. You know, one of them is, for myself personally, I'd be like, well, I probably give. I remember in my life, I was like, I probably give. See, if you're saying something like, I probably give, listen, if you don't know what you give, you're usually estimating like 5 to 9% higher than what you actually do, all right? Because when you don't know exactly what it is, we estimate real, real high. Another objection was people would say, well, you know, I think God understands that right now, and if that's your lead statement, you know, see, we always think we're the exception, right? We're always like, man, God knows there's something difficult going on in my life right now. We always want to be the exception. Another one I hear sometimes is people just say, well, man, it's easy to write a check. No, it's not. You ever done it? Man, every time I write a check, man, it is hard. I'm writing my tithe check out. It is not an easy check to write. It gets easier the more I do it, but it's still hard. You know, sometimes people say, man, I don't know what Crosspoint does with all the money. I'm gonna talk to that one here in a little bit. And other times I'll hear people say, well, I don't want to just give to infrastructure. Nobody wants to give to infrastructure. I don't want to make a difference. I want to put shoes on people's feet. I want to put food directly on tables. I don't know if you remember a few years ago when Haiti got, you know, blasted with a earthquake, and then right after that a tsunami, and they were just devastated. I mean, the nation of Haiti, if you've not been there, is in a devastation mode all the time. I mean, when Julie and I were there, it looked like they'd already had a hurricane come through. But when these things came through, it just devastated. I mean, of course, you know, all our public, you know, agencies were coming to aid, Red Cross, you know, United Way. Even at Crosspoint here, we did an initiative where we raised funds and sent it to our missionary in Haiti to help, you know, meet some of the needs that were there. And people wanted to make a difference, which is always a good thing. And it felt good. We wanted to feel good because we're putting food into people's hands that need it. I don't know if you remember seeing some of the stories. Here was one of the images right after that. You know what that is right there? That is food that had been sitting on docks in Haiti for 6 to 8 weeks, rotting. You can almost see the stench coming off of it in the actual picture because there was no infrastructure to get it to where it needed to go, into the hands of people that needed it, because infrastructure is what actually creates the change. See, what we are here at Crosspoint is we're an infrastructure that's about deploying people and resources to the places where it's needed so that sustainable change can actually take place instead of something sitting and rotting. I mean, we all want to be like on the front line saying, man, I'm putting food in people's, you know, bellies. Well, that's good. That's why we're doing some of the initiatives around here. But it always requires an infrastructure to get in here. And what we do here at Crosspoint is we build infrastructure. In fact, right now, out in our the rest of the building, we have dozens of volunteers this morning that are taking care of your kids. That's infrastructure. They're teaching your kids about Jesus. They're helping them, you know, feel that God is love. That's infrastructure in our kids' environments. You know, we're galvanizing support right now for two things in the Spread Some Cheer initiative. One of them is this meal list that's in your weekly. You know, there's all kinds of boxes. There were about 60 at the start of this morning. About 90 of them went out the door last weekend. A box is about this big where we are taking food boxes with this list of items in it, and we're returning those on December 14th, and they're literally going straight into homes of people who otherwise wouldn't have a Christmas meal on their table in the greater Indianapolis area as well as through Fishers here. We're creating an infrastructure to get the food into places where it's needed the most. You can take this. You can take a box today. All of those boxes will have families' names on them. There's also something going on that's called the Giving Tree. And the Giving Tree is providing Christmas for kids who otherwise would not have Christmas under the tree this Christmas. And so there's all kinds of gift tags out on the Christmas tree in the lobby. You can take one of those and then bring back the item in 2 weeks so that children in one of our schools locally who otherwise wouldn't have Christmas will have something under the tree come Christmas Day. And most of these things, you know, they're getting maybe a couple toys, but most of it's clothing and socks and underwear. They're your core essentials. These are some of the ways we've created an infrastructure to actually help some of these needs be met. You know, when you come into this place, infrastructure actually enables people to come in here and enables you to invite your friends and like hide behind a cup of coffee. You know, we think there's something important about having a cup of coffee when you come in here, where you can kind of, you feel like, all right, I can kind of hide behind this, and I can sit in here, and I can kind of take things in. We're all about creating a place where people can explore God at their own pace. You know, preponderance of our resources actually go toward our primary mission, which is you. Which is actually creating a place for life change. People say sometimes, like, man, what does Crosspoint do with all its money? Can I just say, hello? Hello, man, you're sitting on it right now. Did you know that? Do you know you're sitting on people's checks right now? Did you know that? The nice seats, you're sitting on people's checks. You know, we've spent $8,000 to $10,000 a year on coffee alone. Just on putting good coffee in people's hands. Because, you know, we feel like there's something good and welcoming about having good coffee. And we pay a dollar or two more a pound for the coffee we bring in, because every cup that you drink is actually changing the face of the country of Rwanda, where a genocide took place about 25 years ago, and there are coffee farmers who are killing each other. We're actually now building into those coffee farmers. With every cup that you drink, it goes to restoring this broken part of the world. We feel like there's a big difference being made, and it helps us reflect that God is just generous. And that's where some of our resources go. You know, you're listening to a sound system right now. And that's infrastructure. That's allowing us to connect and grow and learn and assimilate. Also, I don't know if you noticed a few weeks ago when it was like bitter cold in the middle of November that you didn't walk in here and be like, oh man, it's chilly in here. You know why? Because we paid our utilities. We thought it was a good idea to pay Duke, you know, and to keep the heat on. That's part of our infrastructure. $5,000 a month goes to paying the bills to keep this place insured and the utilities covered. $18,000 a month to pay for our mortgage, which seems like a lot in some cases, but you realize that's only about $5,500, about $5,500 more than what we'd be paying at the school when we were across the street. We're paying $12,500 a month to rent the school. I mean, this is all a part of the infrastructure, and yet this is not wasted overhead. This is actually the infrastructure that propels life change in you and others who come into this place and begins to seep out to the world around us. You realize that the guy that you saw in the video there a moment ago, Mark, you know, when he first came to Crosspoint, that he was an agnostic. He was his wife brought him. She grew up in a Christian home. He was an agnostic. And he walked in, and he in a radical way, Christ began to work in his life. He began to see Jesus for who he really is. He made a profession of faith. And now he's out making a kingdom difference in his circles of influence, talking about what God is doing, talking about what it means to be generous. How fun is that? I mean, how fun is that you right now are sitting maybe a few seats down from somebody else that's an agnostic in here today? That they're all over the place in here. I talk to some of them regularly. They send me questions and have spiritual conversations with me. How cool is it that there's an addict sitting a few rows down from you or a few seats down? They're in here today too. I interact a lot with them. You know, how cool is it that there's somebody sitting maybe at the end of your row who's spiritually far from God, and yet they can sit behind a cup of coffee and they can begin to, you know, see Jesus for who he is, and God begins to tap on their shoulder and they begin to move toward a relationship with Christ. See, this is what Jesus ran after, because generous communities change the world. Generous communities change the world. We want to be a generous community. Jesus pulls teams of people together, and he pulls them into community, and he sends them out to accomplish things. Take a look at how this happened, what Jesus said in Acts chapter 1. Jesus said, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all Judea and Samaria, and to the very ends of the earth." He's talking you plurally right here. He's saying, you will be my witnesses. He said, this is going to have a ripple effect. And if you were here last weekend, you remember us talking about how God's plan for bringing change to the world is you. There is no other plan. That's a little discouraging to me sometimes. God's only plan is you. There's not a plan B. He says, you and me. He says, and we're gonna start here in our community in Jerusalem, and our friends, neighbors, family, church community. It's going to begin to go to the region, the greater Indy, you know, Midwest region. And then it's going to actually go to the very ends of the earth. And that is very fun when we begin to realize what God is doing through that. When we come together as a team, not just as a bunch of individual vigilantes who go out and do our thing, but what happens when we come together in community. You know, when we started Crosspoint 8 years ago, it was about fishers. It was all about fishes. We were like, man, we want the people in our backyards, our neighbors, our friends, people who just aren't sure who Jesus is. We want them to have a place to come and hear about Jesus, to begin to see him for who he is, to see that Jesus is actually relevant to the way that we live. And that's all we did. That's all we did. And still, that's the main thing. It just began to trickle out to people from Fortville and McCordsville and Noblesville and Pendleton and Anderson and Indianapolis and Richmond and all. I mean, people coming in here from all over the place. You know, we never had this idea back when we started that we'd be addressing poverty, and not only in our community, but building into people in the greater Indianapolis area through putting meals on their tables and clothing on their kids so they can go to school. We never had this idea that we'd be, you know, building into India and actually feeding kids in India so that we can stomp out poverty in India and that we'd be having conversations with people about, you know, ending the sex slave industry worldwide, which we're doing right now. We're actually exploring what it's going to look like for Crosspoint to get engaged in addressing the sex slave industry and how girls are being taken off our streets and sold into being, you know, by pimps into being just puppets for sex. We're looking at that. Listen, when we started Crosspoint, we had no idea that we'd be doing that. But that's what happens. Because people who want to change and are on a change trend are generous. And we're constantly looking for ways to be generous and to create change. Take a look at Acts chapter 4. The book of Acts is really fascinating because in the Bible, it's kind of this picture of Jesus or of God describing the first followers of Jesus, the people who are going out to be the church, and how they interacted with one another and how they actually interacted with the community. And Acts is just a documentation of what was observed as they were in the community. Acts 4 says, "And all the believers were one heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions was their own, but they shared everything they had. For from time to time, those who owned land or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need." Now, you know, this is talking about the tithe right here, the 10% or more that we surrender. You know, it's not talking about surrendering it to your kid's private education or Christian school education. You know, that may be a good thing for you. That's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about, you know, creating your own private foundation to do good in the community, though that might be a good thing, but that you still are in control of it. He's talking about surrendering this to the community, the standard, the 10% or more of what God has entrusted to you, to the community that you're accountable to, so that the team can actually make greater impact in the community. You know, every now and then somebody will say, "Well, man, I hear the idea of a tithe, and tithe is so Old Testament. I mean, that's an Old Testament law." And if you feel that way, I would say, yes, you're right. That actually is. And see, Jesus said, "I didn't come to abolish the Old Testament law. I actually came to build on it." So Jesus says, "Yeah, that's like the bare minimum. I'm asking actually more. I actually want your heart to grow to be more generous than just the bare minimum." And when this happens, the world actually begins to change. Jesus, he said something really fascinating about this in Matthew. Matthew chapter 6, the writer Matthew observes Jesus. He writes down what Jesus is saying. And he says this. He says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And basically what he's saying is, that's some money right here. I got a $20 bill. Look at this. He says, wherever your treasure is, wherever your cash is, your heart is going to follow this. So what he's saying is, if I, you know, say, "Well, I'm throwing my money over here," I'm like, "Oh, man, I got to go pick that thing up." I mean, wherever my money goes, my heart is like a string, and it's attached to it, and it goes to that place. Which means if you're putting like 20% of your income into a car payment, you're like, "I'm throwing my money over at my car." You know what you're going to be doing? You're like, "Man, I'm going to Mike's car wash, crew car wash. I am washing that baby every single day." I mean, that's where my heart follows after that thing. You know, if you're putting 30, 40% of your money into savings to feel secure, you know, and you say, "That's where I'm throwing my money," you know what you're going to be doing? You're going to be like, "Man, I'm watching that Wall Street Journal every single day. I'm going to get online and see what my portfolio's doing." Because my heart actually follows wherever our money goes. And when we come to the place and we begin to say, "You know, God, I'm going to throw my money over there," my heart begins to go there. We begin to say, "God, I want to throw my money at you." You can keep that, by the way. Can I get a tax write-off for that after service today? Okay. You know, when my heart, I say, "God, I want to throw my money here," and my heart begins to fall, "I want to be about what you're about," Jesus says, that's when your heart begins to get in sync with my heart. And communities begin to change, regions begin to change, because people who want to change are generous. We want to change, we get generous. And this morning, we're going to have a chance to respond on that. And in fact, I referred to this form earlier this morning. Why don't you go ahead and take that out and grab a pen. And we've been asking you to process this. If you're a guest here today, here for the first time, you can just watch this. This isn't for you. If you've been tracking on this journey, I want you to take this out. And, you know, there's a money section and a time section on here. And we've been asking you to process this. And maybe you still need to process it. You need to be doing that right now. We've been asking you to think about, you know, with your money, what is God saying? You know, hey, here's what I'm calling you to. Here's how I want you to get generous. We've been doing a lot of things to help us get in tune with what God is calling us to. Maybe it's to stop spending on something. Maybe it's to sell something, to free up cash for something else. You know, maybe it's to start tithing. Maybe it's to say, 10%, God, I'm going to begin the 90-day giving challenge. I'm going to begin to give 10% of my income. And just see, this is the only thing in the Bible God says, test me on. He says, give me 10% back. What I've entrusted to you, give it back. And just see if I don't begin to reveal myself in ways and provide for your needs. You know, maybe you're going to continue or go above the tithe. Maybe with your time, you're going to cut back on something to free up hours to give to something else. Maybe you want to begin volunteering here at Crosspoint. Listen, we have needs all over the place. It takes 210 volunteers every month, serving two times a month, to staff all of our ministries here at Crosspoint. We need 20 volunteers in kids' ministries, 10 volunteers in hospitality ministries. We need 6 volunteers, you know, in the band and in tech, just to have the volunteers we need to continue to do what we're doing. Maybe you want to say, hey, God, I want to step in and fill that gap in. You know, maybe it's something with your neighbors. You'll notice at the bottom, it has a place for your name. And I want you to go ahead and write your name in there. I'm going to put mine, Kurt Walters. And then a place for your email. My email is kurtw@crosspointweb.org. That's actually my real email. Write that with some legibility. Is legibility a word? I don't know. It is. Okay. You want to email me? You can email me there. Kurt Walters or Kurt W. You know, because, and here's the thing. Here's why we're signing this. Because, you know, Every significant decision we make in life, we sign our name to. Have you ever noticed that? Anything we declare publicly, you know, or have a big decision on, I have to sign my name to. When I got married, I signed my name. When I, when I got a credit card, I signed my name. When I bought a house, they wouldn't let me live in the house, so I signed my name. I had to sign my name. We had our children. We had to sign our names on the birth certificate to say, hey, yes, we commit to, you know, having these children in our home. And for the most part, this form is for you. This isn't really for us. If you say, hey, I want to volunteer, we'll follow up with you. But this is really more about you saying, God, here, this is between you and me, God. Here's what I'm going to do to show love. Here's where my heart's going to begin to go to express love. And this is purely something between you and God. And so what we're going to do is we're going to put our name on here, and then I'm just going to ask you, hopefully you've already been doing process, what is God calling me to? In fact, we sat down with our kids last night and talked about what our family is doing, some initiatives our family's doing. We sold something this week, and we're going to take some of that money and put it toward what God's calling us to do. We're looking to do some other things, which I'm not going to tell you about, but you know, we're processing with our kids, saying, here's what it means. And so once you figure that out and write that down, you're going to tear this apart, and then you can keep the carbon copy. And then we're going to ask you to take this copy, and as we start singing here in a moment, our greeters are going to come on down front, and they're going to be right here holding some tacks, and they're going to give you a tack, and you can already see a number of people have declared themselves, and we're just going to pin these things on this wood up here. There's some wood on either side of the stage. There's wood in the corners, and we're just going to say, God, I'm declaring that I want to love you. My heart is running after what your heart, I'm saying yes. I want to run after the things your heart runs after. And it's not about what your neighbor's doing. It's about what you're doing. It's what God's calling you to. And so we're going to come purely on our own accord as we sing. And we're going to declare ourselves by pinning this thing to the wood. So let's stand to our feet. And I'm going to pray. God, we're asking for you to speak. And we're asking for you to confirm the things we've been thinking about in these areas, these money areas, these time areas, anything else we need to declare. This is a very, very sacred moment right now. We're making lifelong decisions that are going to change the trajectory of our lives, the lives of other people for generations. And God, we want to be holistically about you. So God, just help us to make healthier decisions and draw us closer to you right now. God, as we publicly declare our love for you, our love for others, and that our heart is running and beating after the same thing your heart beats after. Amen. So we're going to sing, and as we sing, feel free to come and just declare yourself, and it's purely on your own accord. If you need to talk to your spouse or wait a few minutes, you can do this now. You can wait. We're going to do more singing later. You can do it then. But just go ahead, and you can begin to declare as we sing. Here we go. Awesome. You know, I think I maybe had the best seat in the house on this, just sitting up here and watching love be expressed up here today. And greeters, you can go ahead and have a seat. Just leave the tacks up here at the front, because I realize as we observe from first hour that there may be some of us that as we sing here in a bit still are working through what it means for us to declare. Maybe we need to have conversation with our spouse or whatever. These will be up here all morning. But you can go ahead and have a seat, because we're not done. We've got something really cool happening. In fact, in a few moments, we're going to see another expression of what it means to be consumed by God. And I don't know if there's a more fitting time or expression to show what it means to be consumed than by watching people get into the water and express themselves through water baptism that they're going to be consumed. They want to be consumed by God's presence. That's what we have some people ready to do. In fact, some of the people that are prepared to be baptized are leaving right now. They're going to the back to meet with our baptism team. And, you know, I describe baptism as similar to the wedding ring that I wear on my hand. This ring doesn't make me married. But it's a symbol that I've pledged my life to my wife. It's a symbol that I've declared to my wife, Julie, that we are united as husband and wife. And so I wear this as an expression that says we've made that covenant. We're united with one another. And baptism is simply that same thing. It's saying, you know, that I'm choosing to express publicly that I'm united with Christ. So when people get into this water today, when they go down into the water, they're basically saying, I've died to myself. I've said three things. I believe Jesus is who he says he is. I believe that he's died for my sins, and I need that forgiveness, that I am a sinful person. I need forgiveness, and that I want to begin to live my life for Jesus to the best of my ability. So they're going down into the water and raised up a new creation. The symbol of the water is that we've been cleansed by Jesus' blood. And so baptism is literally an expression that we're united with Christ. In fact, in Mark 16, we see Jesus talking about this, and he said, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. And so notice, baptism doesn't make us saved. It doesn't make us a Christian. It doesn't make us a follower of Jesus. That simply comes when we believe. When we believe, God's Spirit begins to indwell in us. We say, yeah, Jesus is who he says he is. Jesus, I believe Jesus has died for my sins. I want to follow him to the best of my ability. And for anybody that's taken that step, you know, then you believe. You have the grace of Christ in your life. But see, Jesus, he'd call people to this, and then immediately they'd go down to the Jordan River and they'd be baptized. There's this direct connection between the two about expressing myself publicly. In fact, in the book of Acts, which again is just describing how the first century church operated, in Acts 2 it says, those who accepted the message were baptized. Acts 8, but when they believed Philip was somebody who was teaching on behalf of Jesus now. They believed Philip as he proclaimed the good news of the kingdom of God and the name of Jesus. They were baptized, both men and women. So baptism is simply an expression that I've chosen to be united with Christ. God, I want to be all in my relationship with you. So we had three individuals first hour, and we have eight or nine individuals this hour that are planning to be baptized to say, God, I want to be consumed by you. They want to declare themselves this morning. It's going to be exciting. They're going to get in the tub of water with me in just a moment. And the band's going to play a song, and we're going to stand and sing here in just a moment. And as we do that, I want you to consider, you know, maybe you knew baptism was happening today. Maybe you didn't know baptism was happening today. Maybe that's why you're here. But I want you to consider, if you've entered into relationship with Jesus, maybe today is the day you get your wedding ring. Maybe today is the day in your relationship with Christ, you say, you know, I've taken that step, and my next spiritual step is to express that in baptism. There's a power that happens when we're obedient. When we're obedient, there's a power that's unleashed in our life. And whether you came prepared to declare that or not, maybe you're just feeling nudged today, and you're like, you know, I need to declare that. I mean, this consumed journey's been big. I've taken that step, and I feel like this is the next step of me being obedient to follow Christ in public baptism. And you might be thinking, well, Kurt, man, I didn't come prepared for that today. Well, here's the cool thing. We did. We always come prepared. And so, you know, you may not be prepared, but we've got a whole team in the back in the lobby with clothing and, you know, shorts and T-shirts and, you know, undergarments that are new, by the way. You don't even have to wear used ones. And we have the whole deal, you know. So you can change into other clothes and say, I'm going to come up and publicly declare that I've began relationship with Jesus, whether it was recently or 20 years ago. And I just want to express and follow in obedience what Christ has asked me. We got hair product, man. I mean, we got cool, you know, good things, everything you need to walk out, you know, today in the same clothes you came in, but allow you to take this spiritual step. And so we just believe there may be some of us today that this is the next step, even though you didn't maybe come prepared for that. But we feel like God may be nudging you on that. So I want to ask us to stand, and I just want to pray for us as we get ready to experience baptism here this morning. God, right now, as we prepare to experience baptism and to observe physically the life change that has taken place internally by people who said, yes, I've entered into relationship with Jesus. God, for some of us, you're going to call us to get up out of our space right now. You're going to call us to get out of our seats, to walk to the back, to the lobby. You're maybe tugging on our hearts right now because we're surrendered to you. We want to be surrendered to you, and we just realize this is my next step of obedience. And there's something powerful that happens when I am obedient to you. Jesus, you're our leader. You're our king who leads us, and you're also a shepherd, a loving friend. And you're going to call us to this today, and I'm excited about that. I'm excited for every person who may step into these waters this morning. In fact, right now, I pray in the name of Jesus that this power would be on every single person who has received your grace and is in relationship with you. And God, if there's anyone standing here in this room right now that has not been baptized, but they've entered relationship with you, I just pray that the power of your Spirit would move them to declare that today. That they'd receive their wedding ring today, that they'd take this outward expression to be obedient to you, and that they're all in with you. So God, we're just excited about what you're going to do in these next moments. Amen. So as we sing, the waters are open. We've got people that are going to be coming in, but if you are standing here thinking, man, I think I need to take this step, you can exit into the lobby, go to your right by the restrooms. There's a team. We have clothing, everything you need. Our team will pray with you, walk you through the process, get you back in here, and I look forward to maybe seeing you in the tub. I'm going to jump in, and let's sing together.